Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, the best in new inventory, all with great warranties. Fabulous pre-owned inventory with the Sunbury Motors Guarantee. And a service department with great technicians that take care of the life of your vehicle, all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, online at sunburymotors.com. Before we get to last night's game, we will open the show with, appropriately, the Macatrillo rant of the day.
Well, there's a lot to rant about from last night. That was a bad defensive performance from Penn State last night.
We will get to that in a moment.
Yes, that's part of it. That's rant number one for me. And the officiating again. I know we'll get to that. But number two, it has been a very bad year. I want to say borderline embarrassing year for the AP. In terms of their awards,
it's only 26 days old, 25 days old. That's the year.
Well, I mean, just overall in the sports calendar, from the snub of Jair Brown from the end of the year awards to the ridiculousness of the All-Pro awards to now we get to the finalists for the NFL awards for today. Now, I want to be clear as to what my beef is about. My beef is about the process of which it's done. The AP changed its voting this year where they have a top five for the NFL MVP and then top three for everything else.
Oh, please continue.
All I'm saying is there were, because of this ridiculous top three rule for the rest of them, you left a lot of people out. Namely, people from the Philadelphia Eagles, who have been the best team in football. It is a disgrace that Nick Sirianni is not a Coach of the Year finalist. It is a disgrace that Brandon Graham is not a Comeback Player of the Year finalist. And it's also a disgrace that Hassan Reddick is not a Defensive Player of the Year finalist. Now, I'm not saying everybody else listed is not deserving, because they are. They absolutely are. There's no question about it. But the fact that those three guys are not finalists is an utter disgrace. And the AP has some serious work to do on their voting for next year.
It doesn't matter. I actually do have an AP vote for Big Ten, all Big Ten. You know, I take it seriously. I understand that. But, geez, it's about the teams. I know they've tried to turn sports into the individual thing because of fantasy football and fantasy baseball and all that stuff. But does it really matter?
If you're a borderline guy and you're a snub, okay, fine. With the Pro Bowl and stuff like that happens every year. I get that. But when you're just in an overwhelming finalist, you have an overwhelming resume to become a finalist, and you're not a finalist. That's what I have a problem with.
Well, who are the Coach of the Year finalists?
The Coach of the Year finalists, again, are all deserving. And I'm not saying Nick Sirianni would beat any of these guys, but Brian Daboll for the Giants, Doug Peterson for the Jags, and Kyle Shanahan for the 49ers, all are deserving, though I think there's some infatuation with Kyle Shanahan happening, like there was with Sean McVay in previous years. But he's still deserving of it.
So in other words, two teams who were supposed to finish under 500 and made the playoffs, okay, their coaches, which, by the way, are new coaches, So there's, you know, so there's no carryover. And a coach who went with a third-string quarterback that's won its last eight games.
I didn't say they weren't deserving. I'm saying Nick Sirianni deserves to be part of that group. That's all.
The one time he went with the second-string quarterback, he went 0-2.
True. But
I'm just having fun with you. I'm sorry. Eagles fans are, okay, no offense. You guys are too easy. For the toughest group out there, you guys are too easy. We're the toughest fans in the world. You say one thing, they collapse. It's like, you got to stop with the little brother stuff. We just win the Super Bowl. Who cares? I just won the stupid thing. It's the only trophy that matters in the doggone thing, isn't it?
It is. All I'm saying is, if you're an overwhelming, if your resume speaks for itself and you're not on there, that's the only thing I have a problem with.
Was Andy Reid a Coach of the Year finalist?
No, and he should be on here too. That's my problem. That's my whole beef with this. There's other candidates deserving that are not Eagles that deserve to be on this as finalists. It's ridiculous that Andy Reid is not one of the finalists either.
The vast majority of time, and Kyle Shanahan is the exception because his team was in the NFC Championship game last year. The vast majority of the time, people who are Coach of the Year candidates are guys that turn the team around. Okay? Because now it becomes obvious that, hey, we made the change, and look, we went from high draft pick, we stink, to playoffs. Okay, what was the difference? Yeah, he changed some players, but like, you know, I'll be honest with you. As I told Brian, I was very direct with him. I told you what I told him. I said, you got to take six legitimate NFL players on that team. Yeah, I was exaggerating, but it made him feel better. Why does this stuff matter? ESPN does a lot of, you know, like, you know, mid-year, you know, and really it's been with the NBA more than anything else. Yeah.
Now, those are dumb. I'll give you that one. I hate mid-season awards.
But, you know, but they do a lot of, they showed some Ja Morant play, and it's something like Lull the Baby to Sleep or whatever it's called. And like, nobody does it better. And he is like, I don't care. Did he score? Did they win? I don't.
Exactly. And that's where the over-infatuation comes in with certain coaches and players.
Maybe I'm just too simplistic. I mean, but was it good enough? Did you score? Did you win? I mean, that's to me what it's about. You know, you got 32 teams, 32 coaches. Okay, you've got, let's just multiply times 50 because there's so many guys that come in. So you got 1,600 players in the league. Okay, so they pick three. Well, whatever. What does it matter? Yeah, I saw Peter King's All-Pro ballot he had on Lane Johnson, Kelsey. And he had Edwards on the second team.
I don't have a problem with.
I only said that to make you mad. I didn't really, I didn't expect you to take it so well.
No, that I don't have a problem with because that was done correctly.
Okay.
Peter King usually is pretty good about these things, minus him putting Jalen Hurts as fourth in the MVP race, but we already covered that. I'm fine with that, what he put right there, with those guys you just mentioned.
And I think he had Mahomes 1 and Burrow 2 at quarterback.
Yeah, and that's fine too. I would say the same thing.
What a relief that it's fine with you. Huh? Been a little bit worried. I mean, just win the game on Sunday. Let's try that. Let's just win the game. Hey, the bottom line is, you're talking about a third-string quarterback out there. And as I said yesterday on the show, the entire Jalen Hurts, his responsibility is to win the game. Right? And really, I mean, let's be honest. That's exactly what his responsibility is, to win the game. Brock Purdy's job is to not lose the game. I mean, they went through three quarterbacks this year, and they're still sitting there in that same spot. That's probably why he's getting the respect he's getting.
Oh, yeah, and deservedly so. And it was then he took a 3-4 team that was a little bit iffy with the quarterback carousel going on. Now they've won 11 straight coming into weekend.
That's probably what it has to do with it.
But yeah.
You know what? But I don't care. Who was last year's coach of the year?
I think it was Andy Reid, in fact.
I have no idea.
But I know. I get it. I can't remember off the top of my head either. I think it was Andy Reid, but yeah.
I mean, it doesn't matter. It matters. Okay, but who won the Super Bowl?
The Rams, yeah.
Hey, everybody remembers that. Who won the World Series?
Astros.
All right. 2-for-2. Who won the NBA Finals?
The Warriors.
See, you're on a roll.
Yeah.
Okay. That's what people remember in the end. Who hoisted the hardware? I mean, that's what people remember. They don't remember the MVP from one year to the next. And we're going to get into the Scott Rowland thing in a little bit too. We're going to have Scott Lauber's on the show today, right?
Correct. 4:06.
And Rowland's a really interesting case because, first of all, he was a great fielder. I mean, there's just no getting around the kind of fielder. He, at playing at third base, he had the range of a shortstop. So whether it was in St. Louis or whether it was in Philadelphia, he was great in the field. And he had a good bat. But I'm kind of sitting there like going, I'm not sure. But I'm thinking about a Hall of Famer. Like, for example, I'll give you an example. So often, you'll see big games. And you'll go through the lineup. Okay. And you'll say, okay, hold on, I got to worry about that guy. I got to worry about that guy. Like, okay. Well, I went to game two of the World Series. And Edmonds was in the lineup. Pujols was in the lineup. And Rowland was in the lineup. And guess which guy of those three I didn't even think about? I mean, I'm sitting there at the 2004 World Series. I'm sitting there in right field. I'm like, oh, yeah, okay, Scott Rowland's fine. Didn't even think twice about that he was a threat in the series. Didn't even think twice. I don't even think he got a hit in the series, to be frank with you. I don't think he got a hit in the World Series that year. But I remember thinking to myself going into the game, okay, who are the big threats? Well, yeah, Pujols. Pujols got three hits. I mean, the Cardinals only had four hits in the game I went to. Pujols had three of them. I mean, this guy was a seven-time All-Star. Helped the Cardinals win the World Series in 2006. He did hit a big home run in that, right? But, like, I'm sitting there like, okay. He's good. I mean, he's terrific. But, like, is he a Hall of Famer? I'm asking you.
I was okay with if I had a vote, I would put him in, but I get the argument.
You get to vote for 10 players. Would he be one of the 10 players on this ballot I would vote for? And you don't have to vote for 10. Yeah, I would have voted for him. But at the same time, you're like, he's the only guy that got in? Really? And he only got 10% of the vote his first year. I think that is, I think that's the lowest anybody's ever had in their first year and then eventually made it. So, I mean, congrats to him. What a great moment. I don't want to take anything away from a guy that, okay, that, you know, he had over 300 home runs. He had over 2,000 hits. And in the field was exemplary. But like I said, I went to the 2004 World Series. I'm sitting there like going, oh, yeah. This guy's really good. You know, the shortstop, Renteria, played in the Marlins. Like, okay, he's a threat. Edmonds is a threat. The Hall of Fame right fielder there who played with the Expos. He was really good. In fact, he was good early in the series, too. Big threat. I never thought of Roland as the threat. Did I miss something here? But, hey, to his credit, hey, he's in, right? All right. We'll talk about, I got to play back the post-game show from last night. I mean, it's actually going to be a part of tomorrow's update show. If you're wondering why today's update show was about wrestling and then you don't have Mike on there until tomorrow, I knew I was not going to get back until 1 o'clock in the morning. So I recorded it before I left. That way when I got home, I knew I could go to sleep. Okay. Sometimes you got to do that. Okay. It's, you know, sorry. So, I apologize to all of you guys. All right. We'll take a break. We'll come back. More and more. Larry Walker's the guy I was thinking of. The right fielder. I mean, for some reason, I thought of him more than Roland. I'm like, well, yeah, Roland's all right. And Roland hit .314 that year. It wasn't like Roland didn't have a great year. He's at 34 home runs, 124 knocked in. But guess what? In the World Series, he did nada. But then again, so did the Cardinals. All right, we'll come back with more in a moment. Great to have you with us. When you get there, you're supposed to win it. But you got to get there first. In the last 13 years, how many times has your team been there?
Are we talking my baseball team?
Yeah. Last 13 years.
Yeah, that would be one.
Last 12? It's actually the last 13. It's been none.
Yes. I can't do math. Yes.
Oh. That's why they created scoreboards for guys like you.
And why I do this for a living.
It's just a joke. Everybody just calm down. Calm down. Think the world of the guy. All right. We'll come back more in a moment. Great to have you with us today here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
I don't care what you say. I don't think Quez Watkins should be fourth team all NFL.
I'm okay with that. Trust me.
All right. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hubbles Wharf online, sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, the best in new inventory. Great warranties. Fabulous pre-owned inventory with the Sunbury Motors Guarantee and a service department. Great technicians. Take care of the life of the vehicle. All right, so Matt did bring up last night's basketball game, which 65-45, the numbers do speak for itself. So after the game, Dick Girardi and I had a chance to talk with Micah Shrewsbury. And his assessment of what he is watching, and we're going to play back the entire post game with him, was blunt.
what I told them at halftime, what I just said in the locker room applies. Like, I don't know how I let this group become a soft defensive team. And that's what we were. They got wherever they wanted to. They got in the paint whenever they wanted to. They caught it wherever they wanted to. And then when they didn't get in the paint, they just shot threes right in our face, and we just stood there and watched it. Like, we need to become tougher. And, like, it's gonna start with me, you know? So, like, maybe I'm being too easy on them in practice, but we're going to get tough. It's January right now. We're going to get tough, and we're going to compete in practice, and I'm going to play the dudes out of competing. Like, no more sugarcoating it. No more playing dudes that just because they, you know, they've started before. If you don't earn it, you're not playing. That's the point and stage that I'm at with this group.
The last time we heard you talk like that was at the Palestra, and the next game was terrific against Indiana. You got one coming up Sunday. Can you get him back to that spot in 5 days?
Not if we're going to play soft. I can tell you that right now. Like, we're going to find some dudes that are going to play. I don't know who it's going to be, but we're going to find some dudes that are going to play. We got to show up when we play on the road, man. Too much. Like, they scored 65 points. We scored 45, but their 65 was easy. They made us work for every single thing that we got, and we gave them shots. We gave them looks. We played patty cake out there. They were playing real man basketball.
Yeah, early on, we've noticed that. I mean, they were obviously, everybody goes to the inside against you, specifically with Amori.
They should. Everybody, guards, big guys, whatever. Everybody should. If I was able to post, I would post our team right now because everybody just lets us catch it. 1 through 5, 1 through 16 on our team will let you catch a ball in the middle of the paint and go score it if you want to.
So what's going to be your thought process on effort and physicality in practice?
We're going to find out who wants to play. We're going to find out who wants to win. We're going to find out how much it means to some people.
How do you explain that to the guys other than just telling us what you just told me? I told them the exact same thing.
They got the same exact speech. So if it doesn't come through to you, then it doesn't mean enough to you. Or you're not listening to what I'm saying. Because if you don't understand this, if you don't understand what I'm saying, like, you're not built to play for me. Like, this is too cute out there, what we were doing today. And we deserve to get beat by 20 points.
That is Micah Shrewsbury, blunt and to the point after the game.
Ooh.
With the, well, but you know what? He's not wrong. So let's start with something, a couple simple areas. Okay. He talked about people going in the post. All right. So let me get to the numbers very quickly. Penn State's right around 80 nationally in defense, which on the surface out of 363 seems good, except when you break it down in the conference, they're 12th out of 14 in defense. Okay? And the other element, too, is you'll see on the two-point number total for the season, Penn State defensively giving up 47.4% two-point shots. That's really good, right? Until you break it down into the conference number, and it's 51.1%. So that has to change, and it has to change in two areas. Number one, let's go with the simple one, obviously post-defense and what you're doing. Not always playing behind, but sometimes fronting. But there's also another element that goes into it, which he subtly referred to there in it, but I want to expand upon it. You have to do a good job, especially on the wings. Every once in a while, you know, teams will run pick and roll or a slip screen. You get the big guy to the bucket. But when they're setting up in the post and they're posting up, the wings have to do a good job of affecting the pass coming into the post area to then make the post player work or get off balance to get it because you've now created an awkward pass. The passes into the post have been done with, for the most part, relative ease. And you've got to be tougher out on the perimeter to then help out the post player. Now, is Miles Dredd better at it in the post? Yeah, but he's not big enough. When they go that route. So you got to be tougher down there, but you also have to have guys on the perimeter that help you out and make it more difficult for that post player to get the ball. And then when it comes time to box out, offensive rebounds were not an issue last night. Rutgers averages 13.5 offensive rebounds a game. They had 7 last night. But when that happens, You have to have the get out of the way mentality. It's my ball. You're going to hit the halfway point of the Big Ten schedule Sunday. When Sunday is over with, you will have 10 conference games in the books with 10 to play. It's the final game in January. I doubt, you know, I know school's off today here, but, you know, they'll meet for film. You got to get them off their feet. You can't just go out there and just like, hey, here we go. No, you can't do that. Remember, the schedule did not help Penn State in this regard because they're the team that played Saturday, did a lot of walkthrough and some shooting on Sunday, did a practice on Monday, got on the bus, traveled, play the game Tuesday. Rutgers, you know, just like Penn State had its weekend off earlier in January, Rutgers had its weekend off this time. They played Thursday night at Michigan State, then they were home for this game. So the schedule worked to Rutgers' benefit in terms of legs and rest and so forth. All right, that did happen. But when you look at how the game was played, Rutgers, I'll give Rutgers a lot of credit. They do cover. They have length. They're tall. They have a lot of length, and they cover a lot of ground quickly. And not only have length, they've got some pretty good lateral team speed, which I think makes a big difference as to how they defend. But he's right. You got to be tougher. You know, and then you know, they've clawed back in the game. They got within three. Jalen missed a three. Funk then on the rebound missed a three. The rebound came back to him. He snapped off another three, and all three shots could have tied the game. Now, does that change the ending? We don't know. It may have meant nothing. It may have meant they lost by 17 instead of 20. I don't know. But you had that opportunity there, and you let it slip, and then Rutgers went on a seven-point run and got it to 10 again. And I think it's not just physical toughness he's looking for. I think he's looking for mental toughness as well. But that was his speech to us. And by the way, when he went to the press conference, he reiterated the same points he said to Dick and me, which obviously were the same points he made to his team before he talked to Dick and me last night. I have no problem with a coach sitting there looking and being honest with everybody. I have no problem with that. I mean, everybody always complains when they hear coach speak. That wasn't coach speak. That was, this is how I feel and why I feel it. And I will bring it up with them tomorrow night on the show. My opening question to him, which was the opening part here, just so everybody knows, my opening question, and I should have made it a different question, but we had just gone through the stats, and Penn State was 3 of 13 in threes in the first half. Lousy. So Dick and I looked at each other and said, well, they got to shoot threes better in the second half. They were 1 of 13. So they're 4 of 26 in the game. And I'd said before the game, if Penn State has more threes than turnovers, they'll win. Well, if they had 8 threes in the game, and because at the end of the game, he's got his starters out there. I'll be honest with you. I don't know what he was trying to do at the end. Like, okay, Penn State's got its reserves in. They're deep in the bench. And he had one guy at the scoring table. You know the guy he had at the scoring table? To bring in the game late with his starters out there? Cam Spencer, another starter. We're like, what the heck is he doing? I was baffled by that. I mean, but yeah, you have to be the one that defends it. I was just baffled by it. Because it's not the only meeting between the two this season. But, you know, he knows you got to go on the road and you can't get pushed around. Now, I'm watching the game. I didn't think too. The only issue I had, well, I don't know. I didn't really say much about the officials last night. And I'm not going to say much about it now, with one notable exception. Something that the league has, when the league has so many big men in it, like this one does, okay? And this is why, and the big men are the reason why the Big Ten doesn't do well in the NCAA tournament. Anyway, as Dick said, he's right. It's a small man's game now. Okay. That's why the Big Ten still plays this 1980s style of basketball, Then they get into the NCAA tournament. Everybody's playing 2023.
Not good.
But the was you got to really do a good job on that baseline of 3 seconds. I mean, there was a possession, and Amori did this all night long. And Cliff is a really good player. What an athlete playing that spot. Golly, he's good. But he camped himself in there like, you know, 5, 6 seconds. Like, you know, you got to call that stuff. In a league that's dominated by big men, you got to have the big men also play by the rules. You can't camp in there. And that was the one area I had a problem with. Now, obviously, you didn't like the officiating of the game, but that's the only comment I have is like they've got to do a better job of mapping that out on a night in and night out basis. Tomorrow night, Edie and Dickinson go head to head in Chrysler tomorrow night.
That's going to be a heck of a matchup.
Yeah, we'll see. I don't know if Jet Howard's going to play though. Howard hurt his ankle against Minnesota, so I don't know what his status is for the game tomorrow. But. I mean, that's my one comment about the officiating is that, hey, look, you got to really start checking because this is something Dick and I have noticed. Like, Dick was like, 3 seconds. I mean, and I'm following the ball, so he's the one that will say the 3 second part of it because he's looking around at the total floor while I'm trying to track the ball. And he said it several times this year. They have to do a better job of tracking that on the baseline. And I know you have a lot to look for. You're looking for contact. You're looking for if it's a clean play. You're looking who made the contact. Are you looking at feet? Maybe not. I don't know. But they've got to do a better job of tracking that. You were not enamored with the officiating, but look, I don't know if it made any difference last night. Rutgers just did the job.
Yeah, Penn State lost the way they did last night because of the way they played defense. And they need to play better, but they have a clear talent issue when it comes to the lack of talent they have. And that's something that has to be addressed in future recruiting classes, which looks like you have in these next two that Micah Shrewsbury
it's
has.
Not, okay, right now it's youth with the big man. Youth with the big man is a big problem right now, which is getting into the weight room, getting stronger, more experience. You know, you talk about baptism by fire, that old saying.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's what Kev Ajayi is getting. I mean, yeah. Look, he's going. I mean, look at this stretch. I think I'll go from Cliff Amore to Hunter Dickinson, and then my next game is against Zach Edey.
Yeah, you're asking a lot.
Against Derek Walker. It's like
no question.
So you've got to be tougher all the way around. He's got to be tougher. He's just a kid, but he's got to be tougher, right? And the people around him have to help out by being tougher, and they've got to do a better job of making every entry pass into the post as tough as you can get it and make it for to help him out in that spot. We'll see how Keba grows as time goes. You know, and when I mean growth, I don't mean going from 6'9 to 6'11. I mean in terms of strength, conditioning, everything that goes with it, because he's only been on campus since June.
And so I say poised, too.
Yeah, I mean, he can't play nervous. I mean, now last night he got a couple of baskets. We thought that helped him. When you're in there and you're going against these guys, I mean, the area you worry about with him is you don't want him to lose confidence. And that is an area that, you know, worries you. The problem you have in the league is quite simple. There are not only a lot of really good big men in the league, they're all experienced. Amori's a junior. Edie's a junior. Dickinson's a junior. Trace Jackson Davis is a senior. Walker is a senior. You know, you start going through, like, not just who these guys are, but their age, which means they have multiple years in the weight room. They've had multiple years of skill development. They've had, you know, multiple years of going through and what to expect in the conference. And it's making a big, you know, and Penn State tried to get a big man in the portal. They just could not secure a big man in the portal last year. I just couldn't do it. And so you knew going in this was going to be a potential issue. Now, despite all this, they're still 13-7. They're 4-5 in the league. You know, if they can win on Sunday, they get themselves back to 500 in the league. You don't want to have 0-2 weeks. You don't. That's the one thing you cannot afford to do. And so they've got their home game Sunday at noon, which means you can still get back in time to watch the beloved Eagles play with the kickoff set for 3:12 at the Link.
Correct. Chip, that's perfect.
Chip and Dip Day over at Matt's place, by the way. Should be fabulous.
Absolutely. But as far as the officials go, I was just saying that based on observations I saw. I didn't see the game last night firsthand because I was doing Salem's Grove, but it just seemed like you're hearing the same song and dance with officiating when it comes to Jalen Pickett. And if that's going to be the case, I just feel like Penn State's always going to be at a disadvantage because this is how the league is. And I don't know how you solve that.
I don't know. One thing that Jalen's going to have to work through, a couple things. Okay, one. Teams, you know, you knew McConnell would draw him. Now, McConnell did get three fouls in the game, all right? And he did have to sit out a period of time because he had two fouls. When he picked up his third, he sat out again. And Jalen still had 15 last night, and he shot a really good percentage. He had 8 rebounds, and he only had 2 assists. Now, the key to an assist is the guy you pass the ball to has to hit the shot, okay? And when you're only shooting 33%, there aren't going to be many assists. He still played a good game. He just has to fight through. He's just going to have to fight through the contact, and he's strong enough to do it. This is the example. Now, we just talked about Kepa. Here's the other side. Here's a fifth-year player, well-developed, Big Ten body structure. He's got that. He can absorb contact. That's no big deal. He'll just have to fight through it. Now, do other players in this league maybe not have to fight through things as much as he does? You can make an argument about that. Yeah, you can make an argument about that. But he's just going to have to fight through it, and he's going to have to get help from other people. You know, if other people start, you know, like Funk did against. And Lundy, Funk and Lundy against Nebraska. Did anybody really think about any contact Jalen Pickett was getting? They're knocking down shots left and right. And I was talking to Jason Horowitz yesterday, and I said the key with Pickett that I like so much is he has the ability in the first 5 minutes to read the room. Like, who's going, who's not? What's working, what's not? I said he has the ability to read the room early. He's a heck of a player. But... you know, he's just going to have to fight through that. I mean, simple as that. And he's tough enough. When Mike is talking about, you know, physical and mental toughness, I can guarantee you 22 is starting on Sunday. We'll come back with more in a moment. Great to have you with us today here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
There's something to be said about a sale with a handshake. A service technician who really knows what he's doing, they can explain it in English what the problem is. There's nothing better than having that friend you could trust in the area. That's Sunbury Motors, where you get selection, knowledgeable salespeople, and prices that fit your budget, and more important, that friend you can trust. Welcome to Sunbury Motors, Kia, Ford, and Hyundai. You could shop other dealers and compare prices, but at Sunbury Motors, you get their lowest price promise. They research the current used vehicle market and guarantee their used car prices are the lowest. If you find a lower price, Sunbury Motors will beat it. 3 dealers all in one. See their full new and pre-owned inventory at sunburymotors.com. Pick out a vehicle you like and schedule your test drive online. Follow them on Facebook. Sunbury Motors Ford and Hyundai, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
For everybody who gets uptight about or just dislikes coach speak, well, Mike Shrewsbury just blew that up last night. Actually, you know who doesn't do coach speak? Sirianni does not do coach speak.
He does not, no. In his own unique way.
He listens to what everybody else is saying, which he shouldn't, and and he shouldn't, and then reacts to it. Like, okay, I'm going to get into it with the WIP guy.
Okay.
Why? Just take the money, answer some questions, move on. Go coach the team. There's also something in the NFL that has a level of absurdity to it. This deals with coaches. Number one, teams do not need a coach until after the Super Bowl. Who needs a coach? What are you doing? It's not like there's a winter program and an install and spring practice and things like that. But yet Dan Quinn interviewed for 4 to 6 hours for NFL jobs, I think it was the Friday before the 49ers game. That has nothing to do with the winning or losing of the Cowboys. But he's already coaching a team as employed. Right? It's amazing. You know who hasn't had any interviews? Cincinnati's defensive coordinator. He's had none. Sure looked prepared to me. And D'Amico Ryan's obviously been interviewed, so, I mean, they look prepared. But why are current coaches, unless it's a bye week for a team like the Eagles, at least had a bye week? Okay. But you go through these 4 to 6 hour interviews. Why? Why?